Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Assistant Sports Editor Mark Faulkner, joined by beat reporter Ted Colfin. Coming up, we'll hear from Shane Wright, the number one rated prospect for the 2022 NHL draft in Montreal on July the 7th and 8th. But first, Ted, the odds of the Red Wings getting into that lottery and joining the Shane Wright sweepstakes become smaller and smaller with each passing day. The six worst NHL teams will be in the draft lottery to possibly select Wright. And with last night's 4-2 win over the Oilers and heading into Thursday night's game against the Capitals, the Wings are actually tied for the fourth best record in the Eastern Conference. It's 7-5-2, two games over 500. Now, they played more games than any other team in the conference.
Right.
Just last week, Ted, you were on that road trip to Toronto, Montreal, Boston, and Buffalo, and they were on the verge of a four-game winless streak. But, Ted, things can turn around in a hurry. They've now won three in a row.
I tell you, my friend, I mean, you have to give them credit. I don't think too many people expected them to be 7-5-2 at this point. I really don't. They're playing good hockey. They're doing a lot of things well. You're absolutely right, Mark. Things can change in a week so dramatically and so quickly, and that's what's happened here. But, boy, I mean, they're playing with a lot of confidence. They're getting really good, steady goaltending. They're getting secondary scoring from people. Again, and we've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast, do we suspect this could last over 82 games? I'm still doubtful of it, but I don't know, as the calendar keeps on moving along here, they're still remaining competitive. We still have a long, long way to go, but give them credit. They're playing up until game 14 or 15 here. They're playing good hockey.
Ted, let's hear now from one of those secondary scorers, the first star of last night's game, Vlad Namestnikov. He had a couple of goals, including that highlight reel goal in the first period. So here's our freelance reporter last night, Steve Kornacki, asking Namestnikov and then coach Jeff Blashill about that Connor McDavid-like goal.
Talk about that first goal. It was kind of a thing of hockey beauty, and Sam started it for you. And talk about just the excitement that created.
Yeah, I don't know how it started. I think someone rimmed puck and we got it somehow, and I had speed coming through, and Gags found me, and I kind of saw I had that lane and took it to the net and just had to, you know, get it over the goalie there. But it was a nice play by Gags for sure, and I just had to, you know, put it in there.
Yeah, could you talk about Vladislav's first goal and what a surge it gave to your team and then the crowd and everybody, and just what he was able to accomplish tonight?
Like I said, I thought he played really, really good. You know, I thought obviously getting on the board first is a big part of winning. And not to say that you shouldn't be able to win if you don't, but you know, especially at home, especially you know, with the crowds as good as they've been. I thought the crowd was great tonight, great energy, and so it just gives you good momentum. You know, so I think that, you know, that the game he played was real important for us. I thought it was one of his better games in the last little bit. He's had a good year, but I thought tonight was really good.
So, Ted, Vlad Namestnikov, he's now second on the team, seven goals. Tyler Bertuzzi has nine goals, and he's one goal away from tying last year's total of eight goals. Now, Namestnikov knows he's not going to continue scoring at this pace. His career scoring percentage, he scores on 13% of his shots on goal. This year, it's at 36.8%. Almost every third shot's been going in. But, Ted, his strong two-way play, hasn't that really been a hallmark of these Red Wings forwards?
Exactly. I mean, and they're playing defensively. They've really buttoned it down here on certain evenings here lately. But yeah, Namestnikov, last season, he admitted it was not a great season. It was such a strange, fluky season. But these are the types of contributions that a team needs, and they're getting them. I mean, he's playing well. Sam Gagner's playing well. Mitchell Stevens on the fourth line. I mean, he can go
right.
You go past that first line. That second line, if they can get that second line going consistently, that would be a huge plus. I mean, they've had big evenings on certain evenings, but not consistently. But it's like we've often talked about. I mean, if they can roll four lines, it makes them a very good team. And the goaltending, Mark. I go back to the goal. That was expected to be a fairly decent strength of this team, and it has been. I mean, those two have been consistently good each and every game. So there's a lot of variables there that are positives. And you look at that division, I mean, it's still top heavy. You got four very good teams, three teams that I think the Red Wings are probably better than. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like squarely in the middle almost. So it'll be intriguing as the weeks and months go by where they fit. I mean, are they right in the middle or can they join that top four? I don't see them falling back too much, but there is one other thing, Mark.
What's that?
We kind of saw it here in the last week or two. They can't afford very many injuries. There's not a lot of depth in Grand Rapids. And when we saw when there was no Larkin, no Bertuzzi in the lineup, that really weakened the lineup, the depth, the quality of depth. I mean, you shuffle people around and they're not as nearly as strong as they need to be. So that is going to be one thing to look out for. They can't afford too many key injuries. Not that many, many teams can, but the Wings in particular, you lose Bertuzzi, you lose Larkin, you lose somebody of that caliber, like maybe one of the two rookies, then I think you're going to see this team take a slip as they did on that road trip.
Ted, talking about highlight reel goals like the Mesnikovs last night, what did you make of Connor McDavid's goal against the Rangers? Four players back, including former Red Wing Patrick Nemeth. 2 minutes left in the third period. Oilers down by one. And, of course, you know the rest. And McDavid was flying around last night. He scored a goal and certainly must watch.
It was a great goal, too. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't nearly as flashy as the other one. But, boy, I mean, he's a rare talent. We're really lucky to watch him on a consistent basis. I mean, that goal, obviously, Mark, I don't know what you have to say, but it was one of the, I mean, it's going to be a highlight reel goal for the for duration. I mean, it was just spectacular. Even he seemed kind of shocked by it all, but what a fun player to watch. Fun team. I really think Edmonton, I don't know about you, but I really think Edmonton could be a threat to win that Western Conference.
Let's move on now to our interview segment. Our guest today is the 17-year-old hockey player who actually broke Connor McDavid's record for most goals at the Under-18 World Championships. Here's Shane Wright. Joining us now is Shane Wright, the 17-year-old captain of the Kingston Frontenacs, who has broken two of Connor McDavid's junior scoring records and is the number one rated prospect for the 2022 NHL draft in Montreal on Thursday, July the 7th, and Friday, July the 8th, 2022. Shane, welcome to the podcast. Our Red Wings beat reporter Ted Colfin and I were just talking about Connor McDavid's goal the other night against the Rangers. McDavid was in town last night here in Detroit, and he put on a show. He had a goal and nearly tied the game. But what about Saturday night, Shane? What did you hear? When did you hear about the goal, and what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think one of my teammates just said in the chat, he's like, did you guys see that McDavid goal? I wasn't actually watching it live, but after he said that, I went online and looked, and I saw the goal, and it was just unbelievable. It's, you know, some of the stuff he does, some of the plays he makes, and, you know, in tight, and just makes defenders look silly. It's crazy what he does, and it's almost like, you know, we're not even surprised he's making plays like that anymore. We're so used to it because of, you know, he does it all the time, and is just an incredible play overall.
Shane, you're right. Like, sometimes he makes moves. Like last night in tight, he can make people look silly. Like one of those four players back on defense or back on the play with the Rangers was a former Red Wings defenseman, Patrick Nemeth, who, of course, doesn't face anybody coming in that quickly and making those kind of moves. But you're right. Was there anything else about that goal when you think about it? Like, it was also a tying goal too, right, Shane? Like, they were down by one with 2 minutes left, and all of a sudden he just he took charge and went right to the net.
Oh, yeah. It was a big moment of the game. I think it was final minute of play. The Oilers were down. They had the goalie pulled, and, you know, it's a big goal to tie it up and to send it overtime. So,
yeah,
just to make that play at that time of the game, and that moment as well is incredible.
Shane, what about the comparisons to Connor McDavid? You've broken two of his records, as I mentioned, off the top. Most points per game as a rookie in the OHL. Most goals at the under-18s in Texas. And, of course, it's unfair in many respects. You're just 17 years old. But I'm wondering, what can you learn, Shane, from watching Connor McDavid's career path?
Yeah, I think just learning a lot from what the media and attention has looked like on him. Obviously, he's had attention on him from such a young age, and just the way he's dealt with it, the way he interacts with the media and handles himself, I think it is something that I really look at. Obviously his on ice play is incredible, and there's a lot to learn from that. But what I look at is his off ice maturity. And how he handles, the media and stuff. Obviously, he's the captain on his team. He's the leader as well. So he has to handle some of those difficult questions after a loss, or difficult questions in the room as well, and learning how to manage his teammates. So those are definitely some things I look at. And then obviously his on ice play is incredible. He's just fun to watch. He's a guy that is so explosive and is so fun to watch, and just makes you sit in the edge of your seat while you watch him. And just an unbelievable player and by far the best player in the league as well.
Shane, I talked to your general manager, Corey Cooper, and I asked him about your role as a captain. And he said that you care about your team first and individual accolades after that. He said, you'll do whatever it takes to make the team successful. And that's what you're going to bring to any NHL team. Now, forgetting about the NHL right now, who helped you develop that team first attitude?
Yeah, I think that's just kind of something that I've developed personally throughout the years. I've always been, I've always considered myself as a humble person, and I've always considered myself as someone who looks to, help better others over myself. And I think that's definitely translated into my leadership on the team and in hockey as well. I think it's important to be aware of, your own personal success and accolades, but being aware of the team and how the team's doing is far more important, and learning how to uplift guys and making sure that everyone's doing all right, everyone's having a good time, I think is really important, and definitely something that I try to do a lot as well.
Shane, that's interesting, uplifting others. That comes from humility. That comes from a lot of things, like you said, that you can get pleasure from maybe a third line winger or somebody who's not dressed to uplift them. And that's not a role for everybody. So it's interesting. Is that something I bet you're really enjoying in Kingston this year?
Yeah, it's great. I think it's awesome when you see maybe a guy who doesn't play as much, get score a big goal or make a good play. You really get excited for them. You're really happy for them, and you really congratulate them as well. And just make them feel great. Obviously, they make a great play and score a big goal. It's good for the team and helps the team a lot, and it's exciting, and it feels great overall. Really is nice to congratulate guys, and that's something that I try to do a lot as well.
Shane, how would you describe the way you play? Corey Cooper said that you're a well-rounded player. He said you play both sides of the puck. They use you on the power play, the penalty kill, last minutes of games, face-offs. Now, statistically, you weren't averaging as many points at first, but you were just named OHL Player of the Week, 8 points in 3 games. And then last night, you scored the winner in a shootout against Ottawa. So what are your thoughts about creating offense? Are you always on the go? What are your thoughts there, Shane?
Yeah, I try to create offense any way possible. I like playing off the rush and in zone. I feel like I can create a lot with my speed and my quickness, definitely making plays off the rush. But also, I feel like playing in zone and getting the cycle going and protecting the puck and making plays from below the goal line, or using my physicality to get to the net and get to those dirty areas and make plays there as well is definitely something that I take pride in. Some of that I feel like I do pretty well as well.
Shane, I also talked to Corey Cooper about a specific play last week against Mississauga. So you're up 2-1 in the third period. You are on the ice in your own zone with LA Kings draft pick Martin Kromiak, one of your wingers, a really talented Slovakian winger. Just the other day, he scored one of those lacrosse-style goals. That was first done, by the way, by a Michigan player, Mike Legg, with the Wolverines in 1996. Now, you were circling, waiting for the pass. It was picked off. Mississauga scored, and then they won the game 3-2 in overtime. And I asked Corey what you probably would have learned. You had a goal. You had 6 shots, and you won 13 of 27 faceoffs. Those are just the stats. Now, Corey said that the OHL, of course, is a league of mistakes, and it's always, there's always going to be instances like that. He said what he's noticed, though, about great players is that they're always looking to get better. So he said that they wouldn't need to talk to you to work on your face-offs or one-timers or even entries into the offensive zone, which I found pretty interesting as well, because he said you've already asked for feedback, you're getting the small details, and those are things that you want to learn. So my question is, what did you learn about that turnover and not being able to close out the victory?
Yeah, I think that kind of symbolizes, you know, how our season's gone a little bit at the start. You know, we've definitely played well. We've played really well as a team. We've got up in games. We've had leads. I think just, you know, the problem is we've given up a lot of leads and allowed teams to come back and to take games away from us and take points away from us. So it's a good lesson for all of us on our team, myself included, to you know, if we're up late in the period, you know, we want to close out a game, making sure that we're making smart plays and not throwing pucks away to the middle, and turning it over and giving it, you know, giving the other team easy chances to score. I think that's a really big thing. Learn how to, you know, just close out those games, and you know, win games that we're ahead in.
Shane, the one player you've been compared to is Nathan MacKinnon. I saw him as a 15-year-old in LaSalle, Ontario. He was playing for Team Atlantic at an under-17 tournament, and I remember being down at ice level for warm-up. I could literally hear his skates digging into the ice like a freight train. He kind of reminded me of another right-handed centerman like Jeremy Roenick. What have you learned about watching MacKinnon? You mentioned physicality and change of pace. What stands out to you, Shane, about watching Nathan MacKinnon?
Yeah, he's another guy that I really like watching. Obviously, he's, you know, one of the best players in the league. He's such an explosive guy. He's like you said, really quick, really, really fast and strong on his feet, and he's super physical as well. He's a big body and uses his size to his advantage, and has an unbelievable shot as well. He's a guy that I really enjoy watching, and he's a guy that I, you know, see some similarities between my game and his as well.
Shane, thanks for your time so far. There's a couple of more quick questions. Why do you wear number 51? You wore 15 at the Worlds. Why 51?
Yeah, my birthday is the fifth day of the first month. And then at
fifth Worlds, day of the first month. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then at Worlds, we couldn't go above, I think, 20-something, around like 25 or something. So 15 was next closest, just flip the 1 and the 5 around, so.
Next question, does it matter to you if you go number one in the draft in Montreal? There's so many good forwards this year, Czechs, Russians, a lot of Americans at the NTDP program right around the corner here in Plymouth. Does number one mean anything to you?
Yeah, it does. It means a lot to me. It's definitely you know, a goal of mine going into this year is to be drafted and you know, drafted first overall. It's you know, definitely something that means a lot to me. It's definitely something that I want, and it's definitely something that, you know, I know I can achieve. And as long as I do the right things and I play the way I know I can, I think I can accomplish it.
Your Frontenacs are ranked 9th in Canada right now, Shane, and there's so many good teams in Canada this year, right down the road, like in London, the Knights have 9 players that were rated by Central Scouting. They're ranked 5th overall. In 4th place are the Edmonton Oil Kings, with the goalie the Red Wings drafted, Sebastian Kosa. You've captained Canada's first gold since 2013, and you could captain Kingston's first Eastern title since 2016, and just the second overall. What has to go right for those things to happen for the Frontenacs to win the Eastern title? It's really competitive there. And then perhaps even moving on and winning the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, I think we definitely have taken a lot of steps in the right direction to start the year. We definitely played well. We've definitely showed off, you know, that we're a strong team and that you know, we can compete with the best in the league. I think we definitely have a lot of growing to do. We definitely have a lot of areas for improvement. But overall, I see a lot of promise in this team, in this group. We have a great group of guys, great coaching staff, and you know, really excited for. You know, what the end of the season is going to look like, and you know, for how deep we can go in the playoffs as well.
And finally, Shane, the question that we ask all draft picks the last couple of years, from Lucas Raymond to Simon Edvinson: What if the Red Wings draft you? What do you know about the Wings growing up in Toronto and the Kingston area? What if the Wings draft you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's such an incredible franchise, a lot of history, it's an unbelievable city as well, and great people there. I can remember going to playing in tournaments there actually when I was younger. Played in old Joe Louis Arena there, and you know, just playing, you know, playing games there and playing tournaments, and you know, just it'd be a huge honor to be drafted there. Like I said, unbelievable franchise, and you know, would be a dream come true for sure.
What was it like playing at Joe Louis Arena when you got a chance to play really in the home of the Stanley Cup champions? They were winning four cups over a short period of time.
It was unbelievable. It was you know, really cool for me. I think it was, you know, the first time I've when I, as a kid, you know, playing on you know, an NHL ice surface, and actually playing a game there, and you know, getting to walk around the stadium, and you know, play on the ice and look around in the stands and just look up and, you know, imagine myself in the future playing there in the NHL. So just a great, just an unreal experience for me. It's definitely, you know, a great memory as well.
Shane, thanks so much again for your time today and talking to us about Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, your teammates, your goals for the rest of the season, and even the Wings and your experience there at Joe Louis Arena. Good luck this weekend against Oshawa and Mississauga.
Yeah, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Shane Wright for his time earlier today. So, Ted, for just a moment, let's try and imagine what the Red Wings rebuild would look like with Shane Wright, number 51, the future captain in the lineup, right at center. Dylan Larkin would be your second line center. There's no guarantee of a Stanley Cup. Connor McDavid is now in his sixth season without a title. Nathan MacKinnon is in his ninth season. Steve Yzerman took 14 years. What do you make of the Red Wings, who probably won't get one of these generational-type players, but may be able to win like they did with Steve Yzerman at fourth overall, and maybe Lucas Raymond at fourth overall could lead this team back into the playoffs?
I tell you, my friend, I mean, like we started, I think, when we were talking about it. Mark, I mean, as we sit here right now doing this, I mean, can you honestly think they're going to be in that pool? I don't see it. I mean, I think they're above that. I really do. I think over the long haul, even, I think they're going to be above that. But sure, I mean, whoever gets a generation, I mean, it helps to have a generational talent. But I don't think they necessarily, it's obviously, it doesn't hurt to have one of those. You want one of those types of generational players. But I think there's teams out there that have shown that you can go the other way and just build and construct a roster with. It does help to get that mid-round surprise somewhere along the way, but we've seen what all the pain and the losing is, you know, the last few years. You get a lot of draft picks, a lot of assets, and they're building it that way. And there's, I tell you, the next few years, there's going to be a lot more players. The Edmondson kid is playing really well in Sweden. Can you imagine him and Sider here for the next decade? They've gone another way, and it looks like it could bear some fruit here in the long run.
For the record, the Wings have had the number one pick three times in their franchise history. Dale McCourt in 1977, Joe Murphy in 1986, and way back in 1964, just the second year of the NHL draft, Claude Gauthier. Gauthier never played in the NHL. Finally, Ted, let's hear now from Dylan Larkin. We just mentioned where Larkin would be ideally slotted on this team. Here he is talking about returning to the lineup after missing a week for personal reasons.
I was extremely, it was a tough week for me personally. And, you know, I had to be home for a family emergency had to be with my family, so you know, it's a private matter that you know, I hope everyone can really respect myself and my family's privacy right now during this tough time.
Ted, you can hear it in Dylan Larkin's voice, the difficult time he's been through and is going through, a personal matter, he said, a family emergency. You can certainly understand his request for privacy, but what was it like covering the story? Jeff Blashill knew the questions were coming. He respected the public's need to know, but ultimately it was a private matter, right, Ted?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think I do think it could have been handled just somewhat differently. Had they just said family matter at the outset, I think people would have respected that. I really do. And I think it would have quelled all the speculation and the rampant speculation as the days went by. But
that's a good point. Yeah.
I think people are, but the thing is, I think obviously from this point forward, people are going to obviously respect the privacy. And tell you what, came back. He played hard Sunday, had a goal last night, played well. Definitely, those three games definitely showed they do miss when they don't. When he's not in the lineup,
okay,
it's a different team. It really is not as strong. But hopefully, you know, everything works out well as far as the whole situation goes. And I know a lot of people are supporting him, obviously.
Ted, thanks again for your time today, and that'll do it for this podcast, episode 62. For more Red Wings coverage, you can check out Ted's stories at DetroitNews.com. You can also find us on our Octopals Facebook page, on Twitter, Instagram stories, and Snapchat. We also have a special rate of $1 for 6 months for a news subscription. Thanks again for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.